Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we're going to be covering the continued, conversation surrounding Charlie Kirk's death. Because, like I said in the last week's live stream, this is a top 10 story of the year. Certainly in evangelicalism, but, you know, honestly, as far as the nation goes, you know, beyond evangelicalism, this is a huge story and not to be understated. So, this has had a lot of impact, and we're going to talk about some personalities tonight that have interacted with the death. I'm not going to say use the death for their own personal narrative, because that's not a fair way to sum up everyone that we're going to talk about tonight, but that is definitely the first topic, which is going to be Candace Owens. So we're going to dive into that, and then I do also want to dive into Tucker Carlson's response, because he dropped a 2-hour video, which I thought was very interesting. Then we're also going to dive into the Nick Fuentes thing, which he gave a monologue, which occurred around the time that this stream ended last week. And a lot of people are like that. And, you know, he said a lot of the right things. And we're going to discuss that a little bit as well. So I'm going to apply a little bit of discernment for a lot of the people that we interact with in conservative media. But like I did say in last week's live stream, you know, it's not like Conservative Inc. is actually being a little bit more respectful than a lot of the Mideva people who want to, like, jockey for market share when a big pastor dies, like, you know, John MacArthur passed away earlier this year. A lot of people were jockeying for his market share, but that's not the case with Charlie Kirk, even though he has a lot of market share to give away, because he was a top 5 podcaster in Conservative Inc. But for now, at least, you know, his podcast is remaining that way because he's had some high rolling people fill in while, you know, I don't want to say fill in, but, you know, he's had some, you know, J.D. Vance host his show. And the Daily Wire crew.
Yeah, a lot of the big names in the industry and even just national figures are filling in.
Right. So, yeah, the ratings are going to maintain at least for a little bit. And then we'll see, you know, who is the biggest benefactor later. But, you know, because the ratings will be out. But I'm not super interested in who gets that market share or whatever. That doesn't matter too much to me. And then conspicuously absent on the lineup for taking guest hosting the Charlie Kirk podcast is Nick Fuentes. I do want to just say that, you know, J.D. Vance, Daily Wire, but not Nick Fuentes. So because some people have said that he's going to be the leader of the right. So we'll dive into that later tonight towards the end, probably. But first, how are you doing tonight?
All is well.
I know, you know, a lot of talk going on behind the scenes. This story's had a huge impact on just everything in conservatism and everything right. You have any thoughts on the issue or on the just a whole thing going on?
I mean,
from last week to now,
obviously you can expect a lot of you did have a lot of churches address it, and that was kind of a big expectation a lot of people might have had on their pastors going into the last Sunday, was that they expected their pastors to address the issue. And again, my pastor more or less addressed the issue of transgenderism rather than specifically Charlie Kirk. So he did address the issue, or at least the true cause of the issue, which was, you know, the idea that a man can become a woman if he so chose. So, I mean, that was what was the prayer, part of the pastoral prayer in my service.
And some people treated that, you know, like idolatry, but it's honestly, pastors to me are tasked with, you know, understanding the spiritual needs of the sheep. And you know what? In many cases, the spiritual needs of the sheep are probably going to need the evil that happened last week addressed and confronted head on. Like, that is something the sheep need. And people were kind of being shamed for that by the James Whites of the world. But it's good that you bring that up.
But as expected, some of the worst responses have come from those who are quote unquote inside the church. I mean, yeah, it was Bart Barber that was running his mouth on the, he did some kind of trivial comparison. Like, if my pastor doesn't address this, find a new church. And he was kind of making fun of those that were calling out the Charlie Kirk thing. So that was,
and
again,
there was a viral video where a woman said that Stephen Furtick did not address the Charlie Kirk death, and that was a wake-up call for her.
Well, also the
Zarutska, the Charlotte,
yes,
yeah, Arena Zarutska death, and my pastor addressed both of those kind of in the same time, like, you know, discussing the evil that has happened. Like, you know, we've seen a lot of evil back to back this week. You know, talking about that, talking about a shooting that happened at a school or two, and then obviously the events that happened in Utah. So there's definitely a lot of evil to address. I went to a prayer meeting last night, which seemed like it had more people in it, but it's also been up this year in general. Like, more people have been going to these this year in general than last year. So that's a very positive sign, because that was something that the church admonished people to attend the prayer meeting, and the people responded. So with that said, yeah, that's good. And then obviously a lot of conspiracy theories abound. Like, people don't think that the texts are real between the shooter and the lover, which
I mean,
I actually think are, I don't see those as fake on their face. I just don't. That's just me. I mean,
you don't think it was at least partially scripted by the people themselves to basically absolve the, I guess, the furry lover as the from being indicted, even though.
Well, that would be the text being scripted by the people involved is not the same as the federal government scripting the text. So that could be true. It could be the situation where Walter White calls his wife and, you know, threatens her over the phone that's being tapped in order to exonerate her, even though Skylar totally deserved to go to prison for all. You know, as far as I'm concerned, she was a white collar criminal. She was just as bad, if not worse. Actually, she didn't get people killed, so she wasn't as bad, but she was, you know, a criminal in her own right.
No, she got Ted paralyzed.
Yeah, she did get someone.
Something.
Well, he got himself paralyzed.
Yeah,
I mean, it could be a situation like that where, you know, they're doing that scripted conversation in order to not incriminate him. But, you know, I don't see those as fake. And the other thing is, like, the FBI has been next to useless throughout all this, and that is worth mentioning. Like, hopefully they'll bring in some results, but it was the guy's father that turned him in, and, you know, the pastor, you know, the Mormon pastor or whatever. So it was the culture around him that, you know, and the fact that he borrowed someone's gun. Like, it was all these things around him that were the reason why he got caught. The FBI did not catch him. So very, and because of that, you know, there's less conspiracy theories if it's not the FBI that, you know, did this, in my opinion. So the fact that he was turned in by his own people is a good indication that, to me, that, hey, this guy's the shooter. I'm not saying that means he didn't act and coordinate with other people, part of Antifa cells and Discord chats and all that other stuff. But I think he's a shooter. And, you know, I don't think that we need to reject everything that comes from this tree, you know, fruit of the tree.
I mean, if anything, the FBI is a little incompetent on this, and they were kind of playing catch up on the murder. So I don't think they had enough time. They weren't competent enough to cover up. I mean, Pam Bondi's the attorney general. She's been absolutely horrible. And this has been, like, since day one, she's been horrible. And this past week with her hate speech spiel just kind of reinforces that she's not very good at her job. Kash Patel has been not very well received, in part because allegedly him and Bondi don't get along. And then you have Dan Bongino just kind of like in the mix being a non-factor.
Yeah, and I think he's, I think Dan Bongino is honestly personally frustrated, but I've also thought that Dan Bongino at times has been very frustrating. So it's looking, it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating, because it's like, I think he knows that the job he's doing is not good, but he is powerless. And to some degree, it's his fault that he's powerless. That's all my opinion, but yeah, I am trying to ascribe good intentions on Dan Bongino, but at the same time, the results have not been there. So that being said, let's dive into, now that we've kind of done an introduction, maybe caught up on the story a little bit, let's dive into our good old friend, Candace Owens. Not really a friend. I've never really liked Candace Owens. She's kind of improved in my opinion, and then she kind of like went down in my opinion. Like there's a time, maybe like 2001 or 2021, 2022, and she was like, oh, okay, maybe she's not as terrible, or, you know, but then she kind of, she's someone that needs handlers in a way. Like that's kind of my read on that. So with that said, I do have an article on the subject, and there's this video that circulated from Candace Owens where she's claiming that Charlie Kirk was a crypto Catholic. So let me pull that video up.
Was definitely on the brink of changing some of his perspectives. And I can tell you factually, Charlie was praying the rosary. Charlie was going to mass. One of my last conversations with Charlie was me joking with him saying, just make the last step, okay? You are, I said specifically, you're too smart to be a Protestant. Just take the last step, Charlie. And he says, ha ha. He was speaking about Mary, was definitely on the brink of changing some of his perspectives. And I can tell you factually, Charlie was praying the rosary. Charlie was...
So that's the clip. You have any reaction to that? Like,
I mean, it is kind of sickening that of a lot of the various parties that are trying to, like, I don't say take credit for Charlie Kirk's legacy, but they're trying to, like, hey, he was our guy, and just like parade him and champion him as one of them when he clearly wasn't. Like, again, I know the clip is that he wasn't a Catholic. I know Rob McCoy was talking about how he was like his pastor or something. So you have certainly plenty of contravening evidence to what Candace talks about. And obviously he was very much in that kind of Calvary Chapel-esque space theologically. I forget what the church's name is, but he did his TPUSA events with that church. Or I think it's like Dream City Church or something. But yeah, he was very much involved in like that sect of non-denominational Protestantism.
No,
that was very much reflected in TPUSA faith.
And then this is a clip from Charlie Kirk himself speaking on the issue. Now, obviously, Charlie Kirk was high up in conservative media, so obviously he was not anti-Catholic, because I just don't think that would play well in the upper echelons of Conservative Inc. I think he was someone who can get along with, you know, obviously if he can get along with the J's and the M's, then he could get along with the P's. For papist, by the way.
But I personally would not be able to enter into a faith that believes that anybody except Jesus Christ our Lord was without sin. And that's my final comment on Mariology. Happy to debate it.
Okay, there you have Charlie Kirk kind of going through it. Now, Charlie Kirk is someone who, again, I think he's very respectful of Catholic doctrine, but he clearly says that, you know, I'm not going to become a Catholic because they believe that Mary was without sin, and that's a non-negotiable, and absolutely based. So good for Charlie on that front. Now, there's a lot of rumors similarly that Charlie Kirk's wife is Catholic, which there's contradicting evidence to that, like on Instagram. She grew up Catholic. She was confirmed Catholic, but does not appear that she actually was Catholic, so...
They're not Catholic in practice because you would go to a Protestant church kind of situation.
Right. So there's this Instagram post that's been going around where she's asked, going Catholic and She says, no, lol, but yes, I was baptized, confirmed, and raised Catholic. So she's a Protestant convert, is what that pretty much entails.
Now, and, speaking of Ms. Kirk, she did actually get become the president or CEO of Turning Point today, I think, or yesterday.
And supposedly she's more base than Charlie is. I'm not sure what exactly that means. I'm not sure I really believe that, but that's definitely a little bit of assuming that the man is going to be more conservative than the wife in me. So then we also have this last clip here, because it's not just the Catholics that are trying to do the stolen valor thing. This is all from an Evangelical Dark Web article that's going to publish tomorrow. So this is another clip. And I think the audio might be a little off.
Was very interested in Orthodoxy, as I'm sure you know. He was knowledgeable on it too. I'm not, but I know that, but I'm interested. But he was very interested in it. Were you aware of that?
He interviewed a friend of mine, Father John Strickland, who's a very respected Orthodox priest and a Russian scholar who's published extensively on Russian history. And Charlie was very interested in that. And I watched that interview and a few comments that he made afterwards, in which he actually got very much into the mind of us Orthodox Christians and explained why so many people are converting to Holy Orthodoxy. And I thought actually he was spot on, very much spot on. He said people are becoming Orthodox because they want something that is time-tested. They want something that's substantial. Yes. They want something that actually informs culture. Something that isn't just a plaything and can be categorized over just here. Orthodox Christianity.
Can I just intervene and say Orthodox Christianity is none of those things?
Well, yes.
It's not time tested because they've lost every single, like, you know, foreign threat has defeated Orthodox Christianity. The only great nation that has ever emerged under the banner of Orthodox Christianity is the Russian Empire, which then fell to Bolshevism. So no, I don't think it's really time tested. They've lost to Muslims, they've lost to Jews, they've lost to atheism and secularism, and in the religiosity of the Eastern Orthodox world does not really inform their culture. It just really doesn't. They can say that it's mysticism, but the religiosity doesn't lie. And
well,
they don't
think
really
of it this
that.
Way. When I think time tested, I mean when you're comparing that to like non-denominational, like consumeristic Christianity. And again, we did an article today on Cleave to Antiquity, Converting to Eastern Orthodoxy. I think it's because he looks at the aesthetics and I guess the way of their liturgical style worship or their way of worship. And he thinks that that's something that's transcendent. That's something that's rooted in something that's deeper than just, you know, some boardroom meeting on from Madison Avenue that's designed to appeal to the person in the pews rather than something that points directly towards something divine. So I do think there is that element. I think Charlie Kirk was on the nose of why a lot of people are going back towards not just Eastern Orthodoxy, but probably Anglicanism, Lutherans, or even the Catholic Church, is because they're tired of this consumeristic Christianity. And I think that's what that conversation was about.
Yeah, some crypto, not crypto, some Eastern ortho, you know, some ortho bros were kind of using this clip to say, oh, Charlie was going to become one of us. It's like, no, there's no impression from this clip that that was happening. This clip was, like, wildly used out of context to promote a narrative.
And it should be noted that, yeah, there is a rise of Eastern Orthodoxy on the right, and that's some, and yeah, it's probably
a rise from, like, what?
I mean, there are some prominent personalities.
Okay.
Certainly in some of my circles. I mean,
Charles Haywood.
Yeah, Charles Haywood would be one. But yeah, there is that rise there. And again, a lot of them are very intelligent men, especially on the high end, like the Haywoods. And yeah, you're seeing these people. You're kind of trying to understand why they would go to Eastern Orthodoxy, because again, that's not really an American religion.
Yeah, it's foreign. It's completely foreign.
Yes. So again, as he's meeting these people, he wants to kind of better understand what their faith background is.
Yeah. So, and you know, I'll just throw this, like, as far as Catholicism versus Eastern Orthodoxy goes, The Eastern Orthodox surrendered to Rome and ended the schism in the 1400s, and now modern Ortho bros pretend like that never happened. Yeah, you know, Council of Florence, look it up. And then Constantinople fell, and yeah, that was kind of the end of that for a while. So
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, people want to co-opt Charlie Kirk's religion to be anything other than what it was, which was American evangelical Protestantism. Like, let's be real, that's what he was. That should be celebrated, and evangelicals should take this as a win. Like, Charlie Kirk was indeed one of us, and that was not at risk of changing. He might have been respectful towards other denominations, but at the end of the day, he was evangelicalism for all its flaws. You know, because he was indeed a Zionist, which we'll get into in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, but I'd like to claim he was a Calvinist and like he was everything I believe, but that just was not the case.
Yeah, I don't think that was
the
case.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay. You know, he's one of us because, you know, he is like low church Christianity that had fruit. And that is kind of what built this country. You know, that low church Christianity that bore a lot of fruit, created a nice, hearty people that, you know, cared and do the right thing. As opposed to it being, you know, the redeemed Zoomer Christianity that's focused entirely on aesthetics and the building and is so liturgical that they've lost all meaning. And it's just it's a ritual that has forgotten its meaning in the culture, which is kind of what happened in Europe. But there's a lot of other things that happened in Europe to kind of contribute to that picture. So with that said, Candace Owens is also kind of the spearhead of the blaming Israel and Mossad for assassinating Charlie Kirk. She's
no,
a spearhead
her and
for that.
Ian Carroll.
Okay, Ian Carroll, and then everyone else is doing that as like some Middle Eastern name. Am I wrong about that? Like, it does seem to be very brown coated to blame Israel for killing Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hate the whole "we're gonna make everything about Israel" thing. I mean, can we just not do that for 1 week or maybe 2 weeks? Like. And yeah, it's just like, yeah, hey, look, we're going to make Kirk's legacy about Israel. And then you have the other side saying, you know, Kirk was killed by Israel. And it's just like, I can't keep this. They can't even keep the story straight. Was he some rabid hyper Zionist or was he some kind of like, you know, secretly hating Israel towards the end that they had to kill off their own guy? Like, you know, I can't keep it straight.
One theory I've heard is that they did it in order to send a message to Trump. But again, that to me is very far-fetched. It doesn't work for me. It does not hold water in my opinion. But Candace Owens has been the leading spearhead of that. And I just think it contributes to a major crash out because she's trying to invoke a personal relationship with Charlie Kirk that has been routinely denied by, you know, Charlie Kirk's producer. Went on an interview and, you know, just flat out denied that they had an ongoing relationship and they haven't, you know, he cut off their relationship years ago.
I mean, Candace is kind of a freak if we're just going to be honest, like,
yeah.
And that's,
always wanted attention. You got to understand about Candace Owens. She has always wanted attention.
I mean, she saw Goodman her way out of the Daily Wire, which, you know, yeah, I was over Israel, but she started doing a lot more stunts than just the Israel stuff. And obviously she had the whole moon landing thing a while back where she's kind of like trying to deny a uniquely, let's just say, heritage American achievement and perhaps
with a little bit of a German influence, not just heritage America, but
yeah,
a little bit of the German, a little bit of Operation Paperclip. But
yeah, so she's trying to deny that, which again, uniquely, you know, achievement. And yeah, because which again has always been those conspiracies have always been a means to undermine the achievement of man or particularly European descended peoples.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's kind of how I feel about the moon landing as well. Yes, I'm a moon landing affirmer. because I'm not going to just hate my heritage and stuff. Along those lines,
no, and then we
one
have
of the reasons why I did not like Charlie Kirk in the beginning was Candace Owens. Like, I never liked Candace Owens in the beginning. She was a clear and obvious token. Then I learned about her history with Social Autopsy, where she wanted to create a website. I don't want to use the word doxing, but it would basically just categorize people's, you know, online cyberbullying and all this other nonsense. You know, this person said mean words to me. It's basically like that T app before it was a thing, you know, like, and crowd, was it Kickstarter, I think, was the crowdfunding campaign. They booted the campaign for TOS violation. But she came out of she did that. She tried to launch that during the midst of Gamergate. Even the liberals over at Gamergate did not accept her. They said it was a bad idea. So she, you know, played the victim and then found a red pill, back when red pill meant like black people waking up and stuff. To the
The Blexit stuff.
So she went into that. They called it red pill back in 2017. So yeah, she was anti-Trump in like 2016 though. So she is someone that has glommed onto attention. She was just stealing what, you know, white dudes have been saying for a long time, but she was a black woman saying it. So get her on Fox News right now. And Charlie Kirk was very much in favor of platforming tokens back then. And she was not the only one, just to be clear. But she was one of the reasons why I did not like Charlie Kirk when he was rising to prominence.
I will say, I mean, coinciding with her response and her kind of like her, I guess, desecration of Kirk is the Bridget Macron scandal of her accusing Bridget Macron of being a man. And like, apparently that's going to court and all that. And apparently Bridget Macron is going to show a picture of her genitalia to prove that she is in fact a woman, all because of Candace Owens being an idiot.
Yeah. So a lot of people are going to have to see something they did not want to see.
They definitely did not. They're going to, that jury is going to be super scarred for life.
All right. I don't think it's going to get that far. She could win a summary judgment. If the judge sees that, it's a summary judgment. It's a summary judgment. So I'm going to read the super chat. Thank you, Dominizzi 626. When I talk to my two Catholic friends and ask questions and dive deeper into their claims, they think I'm close to becoming Catholic. I think they have a false sense. I think that's what's happening to Charlie. And yeah, I think that's a pretty fair characterization. They think everyone's going to swim the Tiber. Anyway, next
I'd rather cross the Rubicon.
Yes, and cross the Tiber for sure. So next I wanted to kind of talk about Tucker Carlson, who I think has had a very balanced response, because people are falsely associating Tucker Carlson with Candace Owens on this one. And if you watch Tucker Carlson in context, he's not blaming the Israeli government for killing Charlie Kirk. Instead, he's actually explaining the nuance between Charlie Kirk's position on the Israeli question and how it's evolved over time, and how he's had to deal with flack that he did not think was coming. So I thought that this was very fascinating. I'm going to roll tape. So Tucker Carlson put out like a 2-hour video tribute to Charlie Kirk, and it includes Megyn Kelly, and I thought that section was pretty interesting as well. The Eastern Orthodox section was probably the least important, which we played a clip from. So here we go, 1.25 speed.
Take the energy, the sadness, the grief that people felt over Charlie's murder, and redirect it towards support for whatever project he's involved in. And by the way, Benjamin Netanyahu is not the same as the Nation of Israel at all. Bibi is despised by many people in Israel. And if you know people who live there, you know that that's true. There are huge divisions within the Israeli government. I mean, there are certain parts of the intel world in Israel that do not support some things that Benjamin Netanyahu has done recently. So it's not the same as attacking Israel, attacking Bibi. But I don't think I've ever seen anything lower than his attempt to hijack Charlie's memory and use it for his own political ends, particularly because what he said was completely untrue. Charlie didn't hate Jews. He loved Jews. He had tons of friends who were Jews. He loved the state of Israel. He loved going there. He did not like Bibi Netanyahu, and he said that to me many times, and he said to people around him many times. He felt that Bibi Netanyahu was a very destructive force, He was appalled by what was happening in Gaza. He was, above all, resentful that he believed Netanyahu was using the United States to prosecute his wars for the benefit of his country, and that it was shameful and embarrassing and bad for the United States, and he resented it. Didn't hate Netanyahu. He wasn't out there with a placard saying that, but he certainly expressed that to me and a lot of other people. And there's no question that Bibi's defenders on the internet will call me a liar or a kook, but that's a fact. And enough text messages exist that I think it can probably be verified in pretty short order. Not that it needs to be, because that is true. Shortly after that speech, there was a very intense attack on Charlie, and to some extent on me, not that I really noticed, but on him. I have no donors. He had $100 million worth of donors. And so, because he was involved in a different project from just yapping on the internet, which is what I do for a living, he was dependent to a great extent on his donors, of course. It's a nonprofit. And they went after him and tormented him. Not all, of course, many were supportive, but the ones who were offended by my speech, and there was a small, very intense group who were, tormented Charlie Kirk until the day he died. 2 days before he died, he lost a $2 million donation because he had publicly pledged to bring me to the next Turning Point conference in December. And he told me over the past couple of months that he was losing a lot of donations over that pledge. They put out a flyer basically saying that I was going to be at this event giving a speech. And so he would text me and say, man, I'm really taking a lot of heat for this and people are really mad. The American Jewish Committee called in a statement Charlie Kirk an anti-Semite and, quote, dangerous. Charlie Kirk, an anti-Semite. Yeah. He was not an anti-Semite. He was the opposite. And he was not dangerous. He was a great lover of people and a purveyor of peace. He was the opposite. And he was very stung by that. Those of us who've been called names for a long time are a little bit harder to offend. Charlie was deeply offended by that and expressed some of those feelings on Megyn Kelly's show and in other places. But that did not let up. The reason I'm telling the story is because he called me and then came to see me at my house about this topic. And I said to him every single time, look, it's, you know, I've got my own way to communicate my views. This is actually not the most important issue to me. There are lots of things I can talk about. I don't need to come to Turning Point. I can take a year off. No problem. I hated seeing how much he was suffering, the hassle he was getting from people. And I was being attacked too, by the way. It was a huge effort. I wasn't fully aware of it, actually, because I don't go online that much. But there was a huge effort by people, some of whom I know and have helped, and like Seth Dillon at the Babylon Bee, for example. Someone who had his own problems with free speech, who was famously canceled. And I like Seth Dillon. I had him on a couple of times. I had dinner with him to show support. Seth Dillon was out there demanding that Charlie Kirk take me off the roster, pull me off stage because I had said things that Bibi didn't like or that he didn't like or whatever. Shocking that someone whose whole persona is wrapped up in the idea that we all get to speak, and if you don't like it, make a more compelling case, that person and many others like him were advocating for me getting pulled off the stage because they don't like what I'm saying. This is a trend and one that we should be really concerned about. It's not just about Israel, by the way, at all. The trend is really simple. People with power don't want to hear disagreement. They don't want to be challenged ever. That's why we have free speech, to acknowledge that even those of us or people with less power still have a right to talk because they're human beings. You don't own them.
So I want to pause. I want to pause right there. That actually might be the end of the clip. But
I mean, yeah, that was like, yeah, in many ways, Charlie Kirk's, he's basically saying that Charlie Kirk had a very similar attitude to Donald Trump. Because, I mean, again, most presidents or every president in my lifetime probably has not really liked Bibi Netanyahu, and they've had to deal with him in some capacity. Like, even Bill Clinton describes him, just did not like him. Because, again, he thinks he's your boss, and he thinks the president of the United States is his employee.
Is that unfair of him to think that? Given the precedent of American foreign policy, is it unfair for the president or the prime minister of Israel to think that he's in charge of the United States?
I mean, it is certainly a high degree of arrogance. Like, even, you know, it is just, I mean, it's unfathomably arrogant. But yeah, he has that demeanor. And yeah, to some extent, there's proof, especially when you have AIPAC, the Jewish committee that he was just referencing. So yeah, there's a lot of lobbying organizations that lay credence to that, but it's kind of like arrogant to actually present yourself that way. And I mean, yeah, and again, you know, just like Trump, Kirk and company have dealt with a lot of Jews, you know, obviously from the donor class within the conservative media sphere. So yeah, they, you know, they deal with these people. They like the people that they deal with, but they do not like Netanyahu. And again, you see this with Trump shaking his hands and how poorly, or like how he does like the handshake, domineering challenges. So there's a lot of subtle signs. Obviously, he, you know, during the whole June and Iran debacle, he was going at it with Netanyahu. He was visibly upset with Netanyahu on camera because he basically was making bomb, or I think he did a bombing run on Iran after he said not to.
Right.
So yeah, it's like people that have to work with him don't like him. And yeah, Netanyahu was the number one person on the Zionist side trying to champion Kirk as their guy.
Right. And the way that Netanyahu just inserted himself after Kirk's death, yeah, it was distasteful to say the least. I mean, dude, chill out. You're a foreigner. You don't belong here. This is not your tragedy. Stay out of it. You can give a statement and then just stay out of it. Like, we really do not want him speaking to this issue, speaking to Charlie Kirk, and especially since he does not, there's a lot of there's a video clip that I posted of Charlie Kirk criticizing Netanyahu for why it takes 6 hours to respond on October 7. So, huge issue there. And I think Charlie Kirk raised good questions about whether didn't there was a stand down order.
Yeah, didn't he say it's like a 45-minute flight by
helicopter? Yeah, it's a 45-minute flight by helicopter. And that, no, from Jerusalem, I think. But the fact is, it's not like they don't have fortresses right outside of Gaza, because that's literally one of the major places you need a fortress. So the fact that the response was slow, yeah, it does raise a lot of questions. Because I certainly think that, you know, this war was necessarily planned. I mean, if you look at, Hamas is basically an outgrowth of Israelis trying to topple Arafat. So, yeah, I mean, Israel created this monster in a way. So with that said, Tucker, like, one of the biggest ways to make people anti-Semitic is, like, super Jewish behavior. And that is what Charlie Kirk ran into. Because when he allowed someone to debate the Israel question, they started pulling their funding. They started reeing and screeching. And that probably woke him up. That probably, like, you know, just, like, that heart checked him a little bit, because he's getting called anti-Semitic. He's getting called, you know, they're pulling their funding. And he was exposed to that level of behavior. And it's like, these people can't take any criticism. You know, the person you're not allowed to talk about is the person who's actually in charge. There's a lot of cultural idioms that come about when people do not want to accept or listen to criticism. So Charlie Kirk was exposed to that. And I do believe that in like 5 years, maybe 10 years, let's just say 10 years to be safe, I think Charlie Kirk would not have been staunchly pro-Israel in 10 years.
No, especially if you get like
especially if they were going after him.
Yeah, but especially if you get a Vance presidency, which is, you know, really going like Israel neutral, then yeah, he probably would have followed the party line. And again, if I think the way GPSU was going, yeah, they would see a lot of the base is no longer, you know, pro-Israel, that they're actually hostile towards Israel or neutral. And I think he would have actually worked with those people, not against them.
Megyn Kelly would go on to say during Tucker Carlson, because she appears as a guest on that same live stream, that not a live stream, it was premiered. She would say that, you know, Charlie Kirk was 31, but, you know, Republicans under 30 are anti-Israel. Yeah. Charlie Kirk was 31.
And I don't think he would have, like, switched teams or pulled a Seth Dillon or Babylon Bee and just, like, gone after those people. I think he would have, again, he would have been their champion.
Charlie Kirk, I don't want to say he played both sides, because that makes it sound like he's duplicitous. And to some degree, he's malleable. And, I've said that in the past. He's changed a lot of his opinions and stuff like that. I think Charlie Kirk is someone who sold out in the beginning but tried to legitimize. I think that's very true about Charlie Kirk. Did not like him in, say, 2017, 2018, 2019. Don't know when I started to change my mind on him, but, you know, he's someone that I thought kind of sold out. And then he's trying to, again, go legit, stand for something. And that's what he's been doing the past few years. I guess sometime after COVID he changed. Or, you know, maybe it was George Floyd or something like that. But he changed. Maybe having kids changed him. I do think that played a role in his life personally, in his convictions.
And so, again, yeah, who does Tucker talk about being the ones that attack him? You know, Seth Dillon of the Babylon Bee. I mean, again, it just goes to that.
That side was the one who was named, and also, yeah, Bill Ackman, I think, might have been named. But in the live stream or in the Tucker Carlson pot episode. So yeah, Seth Dillon, who's so pro-Israel, like, you know, oh, you're allowed to criticize Netanyahu and that. And then when you criticize Netanyahu in Israel, they call you anti-Semitic or attack you for it. So,
and again, you see a lot of the kosher conservatives that were trying to, that are trying to champion Charlie in death, that were attacking him like towards the end of his life. And that would again include James Lindsay, who was basically using the woke right shtick on Charlie Kirk the day before he died. And again, that was over the Irina Zaruska comments.
Yeah, because Charlie Kirk was unapologetic.
He was making it about race, because it was.
Yeah. So, yeah, Charlie Kirk, like I said, he was someone who was trying to legitimize. He's also someone who listened to both sides. He was someone who listened to the ultra-Zionist, you know, Seth Dillon's, Babylon Bee guys. You're not, you know, you got to be so pro-Israel that that's your God. He listened to those people. And then he listened to, you know, people like Tucker Carlson, people like the Groypers. You know, he might not admit it, but he definitely listened to the Groypers. He definitely took a lot of their talking points later on. People like J.D. Vance as well. He listened to all sides. He listened to his base. And he definitely, he was not as pro-Israel as some other people were. That's definitely true. Because you can see him, again, he raised questions about whether it was a, there was a stand down order on October 7th. He questioned Netanyahu. He questioned all of these things. He asked questions because, you know, a lot of stuff about that day don't really make sense. So he was someone that was trying to triangulate. He, again, he was still pro-Israel. He was still a Zionist. That didn't change before he died. I think I like to think it would change in 10 years, but it definitely did not change before he died. But he was someone that heard the other side of the issue. He was probably very aware that younger Republicans were anti-Israel, overtly pro-Christian. So that meant, you know, you can't really be pro-Jewish either. And he was very much aware of that because according to Ted Cruz and Steve Dace, you know, their last conversations were about that.
Yeah, and again, speaking of those two, very despicable that they're trying to make Kirk's legacy about Israel and Jews. Like, again, they're no different than the people that are trying to, on the opposite side, saying Charlie Kirk was a crypto anti-Zionist in the making. Like, maybe he would have been in 10 years. He would have grown.
Yeah, I think, we're talking like years away from him being a crypto anti-Zionist. I just want to be clear. I'm speaking to what the trajectory was, because the behavior that they did to him is how you make someone anti-Semitic.
If anything, his stance and posture was probably a couple of years away from being that of Tucker Carlson.
Yes.
And again, Tucker Carlson doesn't hate Jews.
Yeah. So I think that's where he was heading, because he's obviously someone that was moving. This is someone who would have articulated a proposition nation probably 5 years ago, but with someone who is articulating blood and soil nationalism this year.
And white replacement.
Yeah, he talked about replacement. Again, he would not have been doing that 5-6 years ago, but he was doing that this year. So he was very much moving to the right, Charlie Kirk was. And yeah, I guess the most frustrating thing is that there's a lot of clips, especially from 2019, the Groyper Wars, where Charlie Kirk is, you know, they're basically going to use those clips to define Charlie Kirk's legacy, which I think
also
is
which
very bad.
Does point to Elon Musk, who did that.
Yes. So,
the world's second richest man, because he got deposed.
Which is probably for the best. So, you know, if, yeah, we're going to talk. Man, I don't want to make a diss on Elon Musk right now. That's a little bit of a rabbit trail that I'm not sure I want to get into, but yeah. Charlie Kirk, you know, died someone who, you know, cared about white people and being saying it was okay to be white. He did that as at least as far back as 2023. And he's someone that was blood and soil nationalist in 2025. So these are good. These are positive developments. He was not all the way at the point of, you know, disliking Israel and being anti-Zionist. He was not there yet. I think he would have been, based on trajectory, but it was not there. But what they did by trying to tell him who he could not talk to, that would have changed a man. 100%. So. Man, where do we want to go from here? Is it time to go to Nick Fuentes, or do you think there's more to say on Tucker Carlson?
No, I think we covered it.
All right. Because we do not have to go super long tonight, I guess. All right. I got a clip from, I forget who made the clip, but it's definitely a clip that's been going around. And this is a clip of Nick Fuentes. It's back to back from September and August, so 1 month apart, where he praises Charlie Kirk and then he attacks Charlie Kirk. And I wanted to watch this. I wanted to share this because, first of all, this is kind of important when we're talking about the sermon. Second of all, you know, maybe I have a different take on it. We'll see. I'm not sure what your thoughts are on this, but it is very fascinating. That, you know, this is the person that people say is going to take over the right. This is him at his best, and this is him, I'm not going to say it's at his worst, because it's not. But here we go.
We had our disagreements. Where we did agree is that he would go to these college campuses and proclaim the name of Jesus Christ. And ultimately, that is why he was killed. The gunmen that killed him, they hated him because of his defense of Christian morality. Charlie Kirk cannot call himself a Christian anymore. Sorry, you forfeited that. I do not want to hear, and you cannot allow Charlie Kirk to go to one more public event, one more question and answer, one more ask me anything, without being protested, without being shouted down, without being interrogated about this. This guy goes around from campus to campus in the most artificial and phony and fake way, talking about, oh, God made me very blessed that I control $500 million. Oh, I'm so blessed. I'm so rich and I'm so blessed. And oh, God's been so good to me. I'm such a Christian. Oh, the Lord gave me the Sabbath. I take Saturday off. You sit there and call yourself a Christian and then you make excuses for the genocide of 2 million people? Seriously? You stand there and purport to be an evangelist like Billy Graham? Oh, you're the latest Billy Graham? You're our generation's America's pastor? Why? Because you said the right words? Because you said, God bless, God bless, God bless, my friend. Oh, I rebuke the devil in the name of Jesus. And then you go around from campus to campus making excuses for a famine?
All right, that's a clip that's made a lot of the rounds, because the clips of Nick Fuentes from September, you know, last week, last Thursday, made the rounds first, and then people have a bit of a memory that's older than 2 minutes, said that, hey, Nick Fuentes has said all these things about Charlie Kirk. And to be fair, the rise of Nick Fuentes, he was the anti-Charlie Kirk. And that's why during the Groyper Wars of 2019, I was sympathetic towards the Groypers, although I was never a Nick Fuentes fan. And I don't think I could really be considered that. I'm not really a hater, but other than the fact that I might think he's, you know, I think the gay question needs to be answered. So, you know, if that makes me a hater, then so be it. But yeah, that clip made the rounds for a good reason, and it's because he said he did not just merely disagree with Charlie Kirk in the realm of ideas. He is someone who viciously attacked his character over and over and over again. That was part of his brand. He was the anti-Kirk. And for him to just do sort of a 180 upon his death, it comes across to many people as disingenuous. Now, his 180, his last week's thing, very professional, very composed. He said the right things. If he's going to be a leader, he needs to act more like that. But people have a memory that it's older than 2 weeks. So I don't think he's going to be the future of conservatism or the right. That's just me, because I think for every one of those videos where he's magnanimous, there's a lot of other videos where he's not. I'll let you respond.
I mean, you could easily make the case he's being disingenuous. He's trying to go for audience capture. Maybe, you know, he's trying to hook, you know, get his people on board. But yeah, I do think even if we're trying to be optimistic and say he's turning over a new leaf, which again, he's done this before. I mean, I would say when he was on the space with Lauren Chen and Jeremy Boring, I think this would have been 2023. I think he was trying to turn over a new leaf and go a little bit more legitimate and trying to like rehab a lot of his image, but he just has a tendency of self-sabotaging that department. So, and he's burned 109 bridges throughout his, I mean, he's younger than us. He's about 27. So he's, you know, he's burned a lot of bridges for someone that's not even 30. And he is very difficult to work with. And his problem has always been, yeah, he can amass an audience. And I heard a lot of people last week, oh, he's got 200,000 people watching him. But again, translating an audience into a movement is something different. And yeah, it doesn't necessarily matter how big your audience is if you can't actually do anything that's actionable, if you can't actually affect change. You're just, yeah, you're good at amassing an audience and maybe monetizing that. But at the end of the day, you're not actually being a leader. And that's the bridge he has yet to actually demonstrate he can cross. He's not willing to work with people. He's not willing to be cooperative or even just, you know, not stab someone in the back or not have a relationship fall out. And again, I'm not saying every single time it fell out, it was his fault. I'm sure, you know, he was backstabbed several times, but yeah. And one prime example is his treatment of Donald Trump. I mean, Trump is the president. Trump is the party leader. Trump is the leader of the right as of right now.
Yeah, and it's not Charlie Kirk. It was Fuentes, but you know they whacked a capo, you know, to use mafia language.
Yeah, and Fuentes has been against Trump since the 2024 election. He was campaigning against Trump going into the election days away, talking about campaigning against Trump in Michigan. He called.
And
he did
what's
the
important about that is thing. I got to interject on that, because that to me disqualifies him from being a leader. It's not what he says, it's what he does. And when you're counter-signaling Trump, you're trying to depress the base moments before an election. No, you're a part of the problem, and you can't really be a leader moving forward. Can you imagine how bad things would be if the brat named Kamala Harris became president? She's an anchor baby with no connection to the United States of America. And if she were president right now, things would be way worse. Things are great. Well, not great, but it's like there can be hope. If you can think beyond the next election, you can kind of see it. We're going into one party rule at the federal level. You know, I'm going to be a holdout in Maryland, but federal level, we're going to the one party rule. And that is going to be very good for the United States.
Like, how can you be a leader of a movement when you've publicly just denounced and chastised the leader of the current of the United States and the leader of the party you presumably would be the movement, like of the movement of which the Republican Party is supposed to represent? Like, you can't actually claim you would be the leader. You would inherit that.
Man, I hate to make a Hitler comparison to Fuentes, but Hitler did not want to compromise on being named chancellor. And this is the part of German history we're going to cover. He did not compromise on being named chancellor. And that he was very adamant about that. He, again, kind of like Fuentes, kind of building a movement from outside the system to get into the system. And, you know, Nick Fuentes is maybe eventually going to make that pivot where he tries to go into the system. But he did not, man, why am I, it's not Otto von Bismarck. Who was the?
Is it about Hindenburg?
Hindenburg. Was the president, I think, of Germany. I think that's what they called him, president. He was president of the Weimar Republic. He died, but before he died, he appointed Hitler as chancellor and stuff like that. So, you know, he didn't just go around completely disrespecting Hindenburg, but being unable to reconcile with him and be professional with working with him. So Yeah, I just compared him to Hitler, but not completely unfavorable. I'm just trying to use an example of someone from the outside the system going into the system. Hindenburg was a devout Christian, by the way, who Hitler did not honor his funeral wishes because he wanted to be, you know, have a Christian funeral, but they kind of gave him like a Norse funeral and, you know, sent him off to Valhalla, which is all the rage right now with, was it Cash Patel?
Yeah.
So anyway, interesting comparison, but yeah, he's going to, I don't want to say he has to learn from Hitler, but.
Well, I mean, part of his problem, I think, is also his audience creates a negative feedback loop because they're very spurgy. A lot of them are retarded.
A lot of them aren't American.
That too. But yeah, I think what I was trying to call, like when I was making the comments last week and just kind of like field testing, it's like, yeah, he hasn't really demonstrated he can work with people. He hasn't demonstrated he can turn an audience into a movement. I got told I didn't understand what he was saying. And then I got told that Trump is a pedo. I mean, if that's your 200,000 people, well, you got a lot of idiots in there and they're not going to accomplish anything.
But I think there's a lot of well-meaning people in that 200,000 that are curious about, hey, is he going to mature, see the moment? Is he going to say something important? Is he going to speak to the times? Like, because a lot of those 200,000 people are probably curious about him, or they're well-meaning, they're casual. Okay, I like some things that he says from afar. This is an important moment. Let me watch. Let me tune in, like the casual viewers versus the devoted viewers. You know, it's a YouTube channel, so, you know. That Kirk Cameron video did a lot better than I thought it would, but you know, so there's people that weren't familiar, but tune in for that, right? So same way with this moment, a lot of people tuned in, and then he did well. He was composed, he was professional, but again, can he move beyond his reputation? Can he go from being on the outside to being to going into the system, you know, as I'll go from comparing him to Hitler to comparing him to Jesus with a Palm Sunday entrance into the system? Can he do that? Like Donald Trump sort of had a Palm Sunday entrance into the system in the Republican primary in 2016. Can he do that? I think things have yet to be seen. You're very bearish on it. I don't think it's going to
happen. I'm saying he's tried this before and it hasn't worked out.
Yeah, so you're saying it hasn't worked out. I'm saying because he didn't support Trump in 2024, I think that it'll never happen. It shouldn't happen.
Because at least Trump had the one thing that mattered. He had the money. He was the billionaire with the, real estate assets all over the country that had his name on it.
And the other thing is, regarding you're saying he's never been able to translate into a movement. His movement to counter signal and depress the Trump base in 2024 did not work. It failed. It should be worth noting. It failed. And I'm very glad it failed because I'm very glad Trump won. So I guess those are my thoughts. I'll drum it up to last call for questions because obviously there's a lot going on here. But I will say, it's like a lot of people have called us out. Aaron McIntyre just was not having it. And, you know, he's someone that I think should be an emerging leader, definitely a thought leader, more than like a movement leader. But he's definitely a thought leader. And he just was not having the Fuentes pivot on Charlie Kirk. And I thought that was interesting. You know, it was brought up like multiple times in a live stream that he did either last week or this week, and yeah, it just was not happening with him. So I think there's a lot of people that are going to be like that. The Bible says that, you know, the double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways, and a lot of that could be double-mindedness. But a lot of people, myself included, have changed their mind on Charlie Kirk a lot. But maybe Fuentes did, but I've acknowledged I have changed a lot on when it comes to my opinion of Charlie Kirk. I don't know if Fuentes has done that enough to convince people that, hey, his pivot is genuine. Other than beyond saying I've had my disagreements with him, because
I mean, in some ways,
Fuentes, what we just played, that clip we just played, was not just merely disagreements.
I mean, America First Con, or whatever Fuentes's conference was called, was supposed to be like a counter to America Fest or TPUSA. So he would host it in the same city.
I think it was CPAC.
No, AFPAC. That's what it was called. So yeah, he was basically hosting it as a counter conference to Charlie Kirk, which is why, again, it was very dumb to host it in cities, and then it got canceled last year. And you know, there's some issues with refunding the money or not refunding the money. And it's all because he didn't want to host it in a state where the state is obligated to protect your conference, and the state venues that you can host these conferences at can't cancel you. But you know, if you're a very hot political subject, you should be a little smarter with your OPSEC.
You actually know a little bit more about conference planning than I do. And that's what's coming in there for, yeah. So people in the audience might not realize that. But anyway, let's see if we have any questions in the chat. Yeah, I think this is a good by Stolen Magnolia. Such a weird thing to ultimately watch Charlie's number one enemy act more composed and sound respectful, while a person who says they're Charlie's number one friend is acting ridiculous and disrespectful. Yes, that is a very fair contrast between Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens. Yes, very good point. So, I don't see any questions, so... if you like Evangelical Dark Web, you can support us at our Patreon-like system at evangelicaldarkweb.org/join. That gives you bonus access to bonus content. You can try and do more bonus content in writing, not in videos. We don't have a YouTube membership yet, but let me know if you're interested in that as well. Well, the least you can do is like this video and subscribe to the channel, to the podcast, if you are new. New subscriptions are the best thing you can do for that magical YouTube algorithm. Best thing you can do is new subscription. So, other than that, have a blessed day, stay based, Christ is King, and we will catch you on the next one.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.